All right, thank you all for coming today. Today I'm going to be talking about some preliminary research I'm doing in El Salvador as part of my PhD, and I'm really trying to analyze the relationship between soil management and food security. But before delving right into things, I want to give you a little bit of background. So especially here at this conference, I think everyone seems to be talking about how are we going to feed the world in 2050. But I want to bring the conversation back to today. This is a map of malnourishment rates in 2012. As you can see, there's a lot of red. Red is the highest and green is the lowest. And people tend to focus here in Africa, but I want to bring the conversation back to Central America, these other little red areas. So for the rest of my talk, I'll be focusing on El Salvador, giving a little bit of background on the country, some of the methods I use, as well as some preliminary results, and how these results are going to impact future work. So El Salvador is a small country about the size of Connecticut on the Pacific coast of Central America. Looking at it a little bit more closely, as you can see, there's a volcanic corridor going through the center of the country.
You want a pointer?
Yes, that's better. Whatever. Most of the land that smallholder farmers are using is quite hilly, very marginalized, and more specifically where I was, the two areas with stars. So I chose one area on the coast, right here, and then another area in the mountains on the border of Honduras. I chose these two areas to get a more representative sample of smallholder farmers around the country. And I chose El Salvador because it represents a country with very marginalized land, very little arable land capacity, and high need for a very efficient and sustainable land use. Furthermore, around 90% of farmers in the country are farming less than 1.5 hectares, so the majority of farmers in El Salvador are smallholder farmers. In El Salvador, like many other countries in the world, has experienced significantly increasing corn yields. Even though these corn yields are much lower than ours in the U.S., they are still quite increasing. However, despite this increasing yield for the past 50 years, there's also an increase in food insecurity. One example of this is undernutrition rates. As you can see, in 1999, undernutrition was 9%, and it steadily risen till in 2012, it was 12%. And I'd like to just remind you that in rural areas, the undernutrition rates are much higher than the national averages. Furthermore, some recent research in 2013 has shown that many smallholder farmers in the western part of the country are actually losing money on their subsistence food plots. So this reality has led me to my research question, which is basically, can sustainable soil management practices actually improve food security for these smallholder farmers? To answer this, we're taking a three-pronged approach. First, examining the current agricultural practices and food security levels to see if there's actually an ability to increase food security and what kind of soil management practices they're doing. And then we're going to go into more in-depth soil sampling and farm mapping, as well as eventual field trials. But for today, I'm just going to focus on this first area, the results of current agricultural practices and food security levels. So going into the methods, from now on, when I talk about food security, I'm actually talking about a food security index. It's a Latin American and Caribbean index developed by the UN. It's the 15-question survey, and based on the number of yeses that people respond to, you create a light, a medium, or severe level of food insecurity. And as a reminder, when I talk about soil conservation, I'm referring to soil conservation for tropical smallholder farmers, terracing, ditches, not burning, and other practices. And so this summer I interviewed 43 households. The male and female heads of the households were interviewed. And our goal with these interviews was threefold. One, to examine current soil conservation and agricultural practices, determine basic food security levels, and gauge an interest in future research, because one of our goals is to go back and do on-farm research with some of these 43 families. So the survey had two main components. First was food security. Like I showed you before, we did a food security index, but we also gathered a lot of family data that could possibly impact food security. as well as some basic agricultural data. Our goal here was to basically gather as much agricultural related data as possible, as well as ask them what they thought were their main challenges, both for food security and for agriculture, and if there were any new skills or techniques that they are interested in learning. So moving on to the results. As you can see, I gathered a lot of data with these surveys, but I'm just going to give you the highlights because of time. So for food security, overall, 98% of households interviewed were food insecure. And this ranged from light, 24% had light food insecurity, which might mean that some families during certain months of the year had lower food availability, less variety in their diets, might experience some hunger. But 31% had severe food insecurity. And this means that families were often skipping meals, often going to bed hungry, and doing things that they preferred not to do to get food. In fact, for a number of families that I interviewed, 2 meals a day was the common instead of 3 meals a day. And I also asked them what they saw as their main challenges to feeding the family and asking their opinion. And this was an open-ended question, but despite it being open-ended, it was really easy to group the responses into 4 main categories. Lack of money wasn't too surprising. Lack of work, also not too surprising. But climate here, I was surprised that this came out. And what I mean by climate is that families said in the past 5-10 years or so, there's been increasing amounts of drought or higher numbers of heavy rains that has decreased their harvest and made it harder for them to feed their family. So going on to agrochemical usage, right? This is important because around 50 to 60% of the government's national budget for agriculture is spent on giving out fertilizer and certified seeds. So around 92% are using some sort of fertilizer, synthetic fertilizer, mostly ammonium sulfate, and a 16-20-0 formula. And their average quantity applied is around 93 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare and 106 kilograms of phosphorus per hectare. There's a high usage of herbicide. Around 83% of families are applying some sort of herbicide, and overwhelmingly Paraquat is the main herbicide applied. And then around 20% of families are applying some sort of insecticide. Here I just have the synthetic insecticides being applied, but around 5% more families applied an organic homemade insecticide. And something interesting about the insecticide is that just the use of insecticide showed that families who were using insecticide had higher yields, but the same trend was not found for herbicides. So then, what were the actual yields? So this was yield data based on 2013, self-reported from the farmers, and then the El Salvador average is from the National Ministry of Agriculture for the same year. And as you can see, corn yields were much lower than the national average, around 1,000 kilograms per hectare lower. Bean yields were still lower, but not quite as severely. So we see that yields are quite low, but what are the driving factors in this? I looked at seed variety. Families tended to be planting one of 3 varieties of seeds, either a Landrace, which they've been saving for years in their family, a certified seed, often given away by the government, and this means some sort of hybrid, or some combination of both. And here, as you can see, that seed variety is not impacting yield. That does not seem to be the driving factor. And I would also like to point out that a significant number of people are planting only Landrace seeds, even though the government is giving out free hybridized seeds. So if it's not seed, it's possibly a nutrient deficiency. However, you can see here that on the x-axis, we have synthetic nitrogen applied kilograms per hectare. The y-axis is kilograms corn harvested, but there's quite a large scattering of data. Nitrogen does not seem to be the limiting factor here. There is a slight upward trend, but there is not a significant correlation. So because these are tropical soils with high acidity and low phosphorus availability, maybe it's more related to phosphorus. So I also looked at phosphorus. So here with corn, similar graph, but again, really wide scattering, a slight upward trend, but no significant correlation between corn and phosphorus. If you look over to your right and looking at the bean Here we're looking at the same type of graph, but just looking at bean yield as opposed to corn. There is a weak correlation between bean yield and phosphorus applied, but the correlation is weak, and it appears that there are other factors possibly driving yield more so than just phosphorus application. Possibly things like soil conservation. Here are two pictures, aerial pictures, of lands in El Salvador, and you can see that the land is highly sloped, often marginal, and some sort of erosion control is definitely needed. But unfortunately, families were using a very low amount of soil conservation techniques, and because of this, we were not able to run any correlations between soil conservation and food security or soil conservation and yield. But this is just one example of a question we asked, and as you can see, only 34% of families were using any sort of soil conservation barriers. And of those 34%, very few were actually maintaining them. So we didn't feel it was we were able to use that. So we also asked families what they saw as their main challenge to increasing production. And again, climate comes out for the same reasons. Lastly, really important for me, is that overall, many farmers said that they are interested in trying out some sort of new technique or trial on their own land. And then when I asked them what they would like to learn, it was an open-ended question, but some main trends came out. What was very exciting for me was erosion control. Many people specifically said, how can I keep my soil from washing away? Which is good for future research. So to summarize what we found this summer, there was a very high level of food insecurity among these smallholder farmers. Seed type and fertilizer additions did not appear to be the limiting factors in yield. And there's overall a very limited use of soil conservation practice, but great interest in trying out some. Thus, our main conclusion is there's a great potential to improve yields and food security through improved soil management. So for future research, we plan to go back and do a more in-depth description of current agricultural practices, actually going out and mapping out some farms, doing some soil tests, and then identifying from that some really appropriate practices that might be key for the farm levels to improve yield and food security, and then eventually do some on-farm field trials to evaluate the appropriateness of these. However, here, DIE is probably not the best acronym. So if you have any suggestions, let me know. And with that, I hope I have time for some questions. Yes.
This
summer, it was just self-reported data, and I asked them some of their main challenges, and very few people mentioned disease. From my experience there, I did see some stuff, but really for beans, it was not an overwhelming problem. Corn did have some disease, which would probably be explained by the increased yield due to some insecticide use. Yes.
The leading factor affecting food insecurity is lack of money. Other than inputs, what are they using the money for? And if they're subsistence farmers, where are they getting the money?
Very good question. And lack of money, many people said lack of money to buy fertilizers or inputs or to supply more labor to do increase planting, do better weeding, because there was all, farming a hectare, 2 hectares of land all by hand is very labor intensive. Many families would sell some extra corn or beans to get extra money, or there was a number of people who make hammocks. The region of Morazan, if you saw on the border of Honduras, has been making hammocks for around 500 years, so a lot of families get very small amounts of extra money through that. I think that's a big thing that I'm trying to get at, is there's this perception that if I apply more nitrogen, I'm going to get better yields, or more insecticide or herbicide. But is that necessarily true, is what we're trying to look at.
So they're not looking for money to buy food?
Not necessarily, no. For food security, sometimes, yes. But for production, no.
There's been a lot of work on farmers' perception of the influence of rainfall and climate on productivity, and it can be quite skewed when they experience hunger in drought time. I'm interested whether or not you collected any information in this initial study on things like time of sowing or plant densities, other agronomic management factors that may have contributed to the yield variability.
I got around planting dates, but I think it's something that when I go back and actually do, actually map out some stuff and collect more in-depth data on, this was really just a diagnostic to see the potentials. And I'm working on correlating, looking at some weather data for the past 20 years. There's not a ton great data for long-term for El Salvador, but to actually in. I've been there for a number, like 8 to 10 years, and there have been some very significant droughts in the country, so I would mention that. So I think that's really changed farmers' perceptions of it.
Are there many model farms around demonstrating different soil conservation techniques?
That's the thing. There are on universities. But that, like the universities are often located in the cities and not necessarily out in the villages. And the farmers often have, many farmers I worked with had never been to San Salvador, never even left their villages. Except for during the Civil War when they were refugees in Honduras. So many of these farmers were resettled after the Civil War. So even more marginalized populations. Rachel?
They have like no soil testing standards, right? In terms of this is your critical P level, this is your critical K level, anything like that?
People are not really doing soil tests. They do. So really the only soil tests that are happening, I actually use a coffee lab. I just did some very preliminary soil samples just for curiosity, not enough to be any significant. And they do have recommendations for coffee. And for larger landholders, but I think that these not really specific for the overall country. Any other questions? Yeah, in the back. Yes.
So your graph for phosphorus is looking at phosphorus fertilizer inputs to yields.
Mm-hmm.
If you have highly acidic soils, it would be, low mortality to get
right.
Available phosphorus estimates. And additionally, I think looking at the 3.8 million sulfate fertilizer, it's been cheap, but it's also acidifying. So maybe acidity has a lot more to do with yield issues than anything else.
I think you're really on the right track, and that's what I'm hoping to go back and analyze. I will say that several soil samples that I did run just were okay on the phosphorus availability levels, but it was not enough to be any sort of significant. It was just curiosity from several farms. But I think that could definitely be a limiting factor, phosphorus availability, because they're applying it. And application methods is something we're also looking at. So there's a lot of factors, but I think it's a big perception that people just assume, and even the government, it's a lot of the government's money to just give out fertilizer and seeds and not necessarily spend money on education. So.
I have a question.
Yes.
What about water limitations? Often if it's not nitrogen or if it's not seed quality, water is limiting. You talked about drought.
Yeah. So that is definitely a big factor. Since I don't think it would explain the variation, since these people were very close, like geophysically. But in 2013, it was not a drought year. There was a pretty average rainfall for the year. I did look at that.
Okay.
So, I think on a long term, definitely.
So any irrigation in the system at all?
No.
All rain fed.
All right. Thank you. Any further?